seated. Well, good morning. We have a full courtroom today, and I think in part because we have some visitors, and my notes tell me that students from Germantown High School are here. If they are, will they and their faculty advisors please stand? Oh, wow, very good. Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here as part of a cooperative program that we maintain with the State Bar of Wisconsin called Court with Class. And they get information about the case that they're going to hear in advance. And then at a break in the day, which will be at around noon, a justice will speak with them about procedures on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, not about the merits or the substance of the case they are about to hear, but about the procedures on the court. It is I who will be speaking with you today at noon, so if you can come back, and I don't know if you're going to stick around through the 10:45 argument, but if you can come back at noon, I would be pleased to speak with any and all of you that do so. Now, we have had you stand up so we can get a look at you, and now let me introduce the justices to you all. On my far right is Justice Michael Gableman. Next to him, Justice David Prosser. Justice Shirley Abrahamson will sit here when she comes back. I'm not sure why she departed. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To her left, Justice Annette Ziegler, and on the far left, Justice Rebecca Bradley. So with those introductions, we are now ready to call our first case of the day, Moustakas versus Wisconsin Department of Justice. Are you ready to proceed? Please do.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Scott Swid. I'm an attorney from Ozanie. On my right is Benjamin Krautkramer. He's one of my associates. And also seated with me is Albert Moustakas, who is the sitting district attorney for Vilas County. We're dealing with a law that is well-intended but poorly constructed. It's under our fundamental legislative review that when we look at a law, no law should allow for false information put in the public.
Counsel, no. It seems to me that one of the main issues that this case centers around is the definition of the word employee. And another phrase that we hear a lot of and see a lot of is employment-related. When I was reading the briefs, it seems your client takes the position that the complaints, in which we do not have the benefit of, we do not know what's in the complaints. We don't have them. It seems to me your client is saying that the material that are in the complaints that are in the possession of DOJ are employment-related. DOJ says they are not, and I'm trying to get a handle on whether the dispute centers around the very practical question of, is your client taking the position that the complaints, which have been unsubstantiated, everyone agrees that the complaints have been unsubstantiated, the complaints center around dissatisfaction with conduct related to his duties, the discharge of his duties as district attorney, or are they separate from those duties?
It's a good question. It's a two-part answer. The first part of that answer is we haven't seen the records. We've seen a redacted copy of the records, but we haven't seen the unredacted copy of the records.
They'd have to be dramatically redacted to not be able to tell that.
I think that they are dramatically redacted. And we've put forth procedures in civil court in order for us to review them. That's commonly done in civil court, for instance, a protective order or ways for the court to review in camera, all of which the Department of Justice have thwarted.
So there were two parts to your
answer. Second part of that is they are employment-related. Albert Moustakas is the sitting
they
district.
They are?
They are,
and
yes.
And you say that because?
Because Albert Moustakas is the sitting district attorney, and these allegations were made about conduct that he either made, that he did either as district attorney or outside of work that would impact his ability to be district attorney. One of the fundamental requirements to serve as a district attorney is that you have a law license and that you have the ability to appear before the courts of the state of Wisconsin. And as the charging officer in that county for the state of Wisconsin, it is in fact employment related. There really wasn't a lot of dialogue on that throughout the process to get here. I really think that that, for the most part, is a conceded, or if it's not a conceded issue, I think it's a relatively straightforward issue, but I do think it bootstraps back to the definition of employee that we've been dealing
and
with.
And that's where I want to go with my second part of the question. When I was preparing for this case and I was reading the definitions, my thought ran to the idea of a district attorney as an employee of the state. And having been a district attorney, it's something along with Justice Prosser, and I believe that's it. Justice Prosser and I both, in long time ago, were district attorneys. But the question then becomes, in my mind, what is the indicia, if any, of a typical employer-employee relationship? Your client, I believe, is alleging that he is an employee of the state of Wisconsin. I don't think he's narrowed it down more than that. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. So shouldn't we then, if one of the key phrases here and one of the key ideas is whether he is an employee of the state of Wisconsin, shouldn't the bench be looking at the record in order to determine whether there are traditional indicia of the employer-employee relationship, in other words, control over time, manner, circumstances, and all the other things that an employer can direct an employee to do? And if the answer is yes, what are those traditional indicia in this case?
The answer is yes. It's a paramount question in this case. When you look at 19.32 sub 1BG, the legislature gave us a definition of employee. So it set that definition. And bear in mind, throughout the statutes, throughout the regulations that departments such as workforce and development, there may be other definitions of employee. I've even had instances where the state has said the person's an employee and the federal government has said they're not an employee because
those
definitions.
Are you going to run to the statute that says other than an authority? Is that where you're going?
Well, where I'm going with it is 19.32 1BG has given us that definition. And it states the first part, employee means any individual who is employed by an authority.
Right.
Now.
But that begs the question.
Right. But I think it's an easy answer.
Okay.
I don't think it's that hard. The Department of Justice takes the position that Albert Moustakas is employed by the Office of the District Attorney for Vilas County. However, there is no such employer that's recognized as the Office of the District Attorney for Vilas County.
Perhaps,
they don't have a
perhaps. Paper. Perhaps I have not made my question clear enough. The question I have is, in all employer-employee relationships, there are traditional indicia of the relationship. When someone reports, when an employee reports to their employer, typically the employer sets the time to report to work. The employer directs the employee as to what the employee will be working on not only a daily but sometimes an hourly basis. The employer has the ability to tell the employee what the employee's schedule will be, not only for the day, but the week, the month, the year. So I've read that statute. I've read it very thoroughly. Well, you can't, I don't see a way for you to get around the idea that before we get into whether he's an employee of an authority, I think we have to figure out whether he's an employee in the traditional sense of what people commonly understand that word to mean.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. Let me give you an example. Using the indicia that you referenced, there are different scopes of employment. For instance, you may have an employer at a fast food restaurant, who has to report at certain times, that has to punch in at certain times, that has to wear a uniform, etc. There may be an employee who's a salesperson who's paid on commission, and his or her boss may say, go out and sell, and I'll see you when you come back with the orders.
Well,
there could be an employer.
You might be describing a contractor relationship.
I don't think so. I mean, I would use my own office. I have staff that are support staff that have different conditions that through my employment scope than the attorneys have. And I think while it is a very unique term of employment that a district attorney serves, it still is an employment by the state. It's unique because the electorate hires him.
Right.
But it's also unique because the person that could fire him, and this is critical to your analyses, the person that could fire him is the governor. And how he could do that is if this investigation led to something relating to his employment, it most certainly would go to the governor's office with a recommendation.
Now, recommendation, but that's a temporary. The governor has the authority to remove on a temporary basis while the matter is being investigated by the proper authorities. I don't believe the governor has the unilateral ability to simply remove a duly elected district attorney.
That perhaps may be the case, and that may perhaps be another difficulty with this definition, okay? But it still doesn't resolve the issue with the definition, either Al Moustakas is employed by somebody or he's not. He's either employed or he's not. And the definition that the legislature gave us says that he must be employed by an authority. And the authority is defined. It's a defined term in this section of the law. So if we're going to say we're going to use 19.321BG as the definition of employee, then we must use the definition of authority found in 19.32 sub 1. And if we're going to say that the legislature intended to use this language in the definition of employee, then we must say that they intended to use the same words as an authority, and it did not include the state of Wisconsin. Okay?
Well, but an elective official is an authority. So isn't the district attorney an authority? And isn't he employed by himself? He's self-employed.
I would say, could he be an authority? Yes. Not in this case.
It says authority means any of the following: a state office, elected official. Is he an elected official?
He is an elected official.
Okay, so he's an authority. Employee means any individual employed by an authority. So if you want to say he's an employee, then he is employed, he is self-employed. That's number one. Number two, you can be in employment. I think my employment is as a judge, a justice of this court. That does not necessarily mean I'm an employee. So the concept of employment is not the same as the concept of employee.
I don't think that analysis, though, addresses those two definitions, and I'll tell you why. Because in that instance, the way that the legislature put this together was to prevent an authority from adultering the records that he or she may need to produce in their own instance. In this case, that's not true. Albert Moustakas is not an employee of the authority, being the Department of Justice. He's an employee of the state of Wisconsin. And that's what the difficulty of this case is. The intent of the law is good, but it doesn't follow through on our general terms.
Why don't we go to the intent of this law? This law was interpreted, or a prior version of it, was interpreted by this court in Wozniacki, and then Wozniacki expanded. And the media took great umbrage of those opinions because it enabled a subject of a record request to spend weeks, months, years in court without the media or the requester getting the information the requester wanted. Isn't that what the basis for this is?
Are you saying the basis of the revised law was to make the process more speedy, more
swift? The basis of the revised law was to limit Wozniacki and its progeny. Because under Wozniacki, if you were the subject of a record request, you had to be given notice and you had an opportunity to go to court. Isn't that what Wozniacki said?
I think that's a keen analysis, yes. I think that is
I'll
what
I'll say, because
it.
I was on the other side in Wozniacki and in the other one, and we debated what was the point of the court giving a record subject an opportunity to go to court. And the court blew it open and said, you can go to court and you can fight in court whether the record keeper, the custodian, is making the appropriate balance between privacy and public information, right?
Right. It balances the public interest versus the individual's private rights.
No, it balances the public interest in knowing what the government is doing and the public's interest in privacy, not the individual's interest in privacy. If you go back and read that, that's very – isn't that true about the cases?
Yes, but there's – in no instance would the public interest be advanced by false statements. And I think that those cases
– First, we have to get to what this is all about. All right. So the amendment of 1932, et cetera, tried to cabin Wozniacki, right?
Correct.
And what they did was they limited, the legislature limited the record subjects, that is, who was the subject of a record request. They limited who could go to court and object. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I would agree that 19.322G is what you're talking about, the record subject,
right.
And then 19.323, the record requester.
That's right. And isn't it then? And it's your position, as I understand it, but I would like you to state your position. Seems to me your position is that your client is still one of the people who's the subject of a record request who can go to court.
Yes, and get judicial review.
That's
correct.
Right. That's your position.
Correct.
So where do you find that?
Well, it's our position that the records that are subject to this request are governed under 19.356.
19.356. Okay.
And
let's look at 19.356.
Well, simply put, those are the employment that they relate back to his employment. Because we have to go to the definition under 19.321BG in order to state that he has the right to review and object. I would point out, when you look at the law as a whole attempts to put forth a framework for everyone to follow when these types of records are requested. And perhaps they didn't contemplate this fact scenario. And I believe the Department of Justice is looking at it from the shotgun approach. They want this broad approach. But we have to take the rifle approach. And the rifle approach deals with the facts as it relates to Al Moustakis. Al Moustakis has the ability to have standing under 19.321BG, but follow it through. If he doesn't, if that is the plain reading of that statutory section, and if the Department of Justice is going to take the position that he doesn't have that standing, and that in no part of this law did they intend to have a public official who's elected have standing, then we have to assume that we have to go back to the legislative notes found in 2003, Wisconsin Act 47. It's Section 4, page 6. We have to go back to that instance where they indicate that public officials would have the right to augment, that they would have the right to review and give a response, but the Department of Justice doesn't even allow, they don't even take that position. That's why I'm saying it's a broad shotgun approach, because in that instance, what the Department of Justice is saying is that our jurisdiction is paramount over everything else, including court review. And so that, to me, is the fundamental question. Bear in mind, the legislature could have very easily, simply, avoided this instance if it would have went to the definition in 19.321BG and stated the two definitions, and at the bottom of that definition say, but in no instance should a public official or an elected official be deemed an employee. That's all it would have had to done.
I think that's what they did. I look at the very note that you refer to in Act 47. And the first note focuses on the statute that's the focus of our inquiry, 19.321BG. Sometimes reading statutes is a little difficult, but it helps when the legislature says, don't worry, we're going to tell you what it means in different language, in plain language. And this, or plainer language, perhaps. And this is, what did we do? It says we created a definition of employee to mean both public and private, except not public officials. I'm paraphrasing it. Exactly what they said is, this creates a definition of the term employee to mean any public sector or private sector employee other than an individual holding a local public office or state public office. So that's what they intended to do. Let's take a look at the statute language and tell me, in looking at this language, which we must do because that's what this case is about, how you can argue against what they're saying they've done in Note 1.
And are you referring...
Let's go through it, you know, line by line. Employee means any individual who is employed by an authority. Would you agree that that means, as they say in their note, a public sector employee?
Yes.
The next phrase is, other than an individual holding public office or state public office. Would you agree that that means, as they say in their note, the same thing, which would include an elected official, I'm adding.
Yes.
And then the last, or any individual who is employed by an employer other than an authority. Would you agree that what they say in their note is reflected in the legislation itself, which means that employee includes private sector employee, one not employed by an authority?
It's harder for me to jump to that conclusion because I think the note doesn't harmonize with how they drafted the statute, and I think that's the ambiguity I think that exists, and it may even watershed into a vagueness issue because of the fact that Justice Gableman brought up about these different types and roles of employees from.
Let me just stop with that. Look, this is a statutory definition of employee. They could have said employee means someone wearing a blue striped suit.
And then we would have to take their words. Don't worry. We would have to take their, this is what they want. This is what they need. We have statutes. Take a look at the workers' comp statute. You have provisions for what they call contractor under. What we would normally think of an employer where there is no indicia of control, no indicia of any kind of direction whatsoever, but for purposes of the statute, that employer is the deemed statutory employer of the employee of a contractor, even though that prime employer has nothing to do with that employee. But the legislature has said there are instances we're going to define a statutory employee to fit the purpose of the overall legislation. So I'm not sure you need vagaries of control with every statutory definition of an employee. What do you think about that? Do you think you do or you don't? Maybe you're not familiar with my contractor under analysis.
I think it's a good analysis, and I think it ties back to what we were talking about before with Justice Gabelman's question to me. But I still think it goes to the heart of the issue, and that is, are we looking at it broadly, or are we looking at it narrowly? In other words, are we looking at it on the facts of a specific case, or are we looking at it on a legislative outlook?
Well, or another response might be, are we looking at a case where the employment relationship has been defined by statute, or are we looking here where we're trying to determine whether there is an employee status? That might be a distinction that you might want to know.
And it could be, because I could make the argument that Al Moustakis, in various fact patterns, could be an authority. I could make an argument he could be a custodian. I could make an argument he could be a requester. I could make an argument he could be a record subject. I could make, in specific fact patterns, all of those arguments, and we have to fit the fact pattern to the statutory definition. Now, perhaps the legislature really didn't contemplate this type of situation, and perhaps they did, it was just sloppy.
If it didn't, counsel, then it seems to me your client has two more issues that are in abeyance right now, but pending in the Lincoln County Court, right?
Correct.
The writ of mandamus action as well as the equal protection claim.
Correct. The constitutional argument.
The constitutional argument, which it seems to me you were kind of edging towards about three-quarters of your presentation toward, but you stopped just shy of it, and that's fine because this is the issue we're called to address today. And you have answered all of my questions in regard to you and your client's position on the employee status of your client.
And I would like to leapfrog though just on two other points in my time.
You have a red light that's on right now. You can leapfrog on your rebuttal.
Very good.
May it please the court. Assistant Attorney General Brian Keenan on behalf of the Wisconsin Department of Justice. This case is a straightforward case of statutory interpretation. The general rule is that no record subject is entitled to pre-release judicial review. The Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals are both correct that Al Moustakis, in this case, doesn't meet the requirements of the narrow exception in 19356. Moustakis is not an employee as defined by the statute. And the DOJ agrees with Justice Bradley that the definition that matters is the definition in the statute, not the common law definition of employee. And the structure of the statute shows that the legislature intended public officials like Mr. Moustakis to be covered by the first category, those who are employed by an authority, but then specifically excepted from that category through the definition of being a holder of state public office. This really couldn't be any clearer. It's not ambiguous at all.
So it's your position that no public elected official who gets his or her paycheck from the state has any rights of privacy or reputational interest that they can have access to a court to review.
Yes, that they're excluded from the pre-review process. As Justice Abrahamson noted, the statute was enacted to cabin Wozniacki and Milwaukee teachers to limit that line of cases. That line of cases dealt with public employees as traditionally understood and their personnel files. The cases found an implicit cause of action based on some specific statutes related to personnel files. Public officials don't meet that kind of criteria. They aren't employees with personnel files, with bosses who are making personnel reviews and create documents about them that then will be released to the public. As the questions from Justice Gableman indicated, they aren't employees in the traditional sense. No one controls their work hours. No one hires and fires them. They're public officials. To the extent anyone is their employer, it's the people of Vilas County are the employer of Mr. Moustakas. And in that sense, they have the right to documents about Mr. Moustakas that are in the possession of the authorities of the state of Wisconsin.
Well, maybe the entire people of the entire state of Wisconsin.
Sure, perhaps even more broadly.
Because we pay them.
Yes. Right? And also, these records are created by the Department of Justice, which is an authority, and the whole people of all the state of Wisconsin have the right to know what the Department of Justice is doing. And the request came to the Department of Justice. For example, in the Linsmeyer case, recognized the interest of people in reviewing the work of law enforcement investigations, even those that don't lead to prosecutions or any sort of finding of wrongdoing.
So your position is that he's an individual who is employed by an authority, the first part of the definition of employee.
Yes.
And the authority in the definition in 1932 sub 1 is?
The Vilas County District Attorney's Office.
And where does it, and that the phrase that you're relying on in the definition of authority is what?
Authority means any of the following having custody of a record, a state or local office.
Yeah, I'm asking you which of those.
A state office.
Okay.
Is the district attorney.
Okay.
An elective official, that he's also an elected official, so either one of those.
But would he be an employee of himself?
Essentially, yes, he's self-employed, but this is the reason why he's then excluded, is that the public officials aren't employees in the traditional sense.
Who's not included in the definition of employee?
Well, someone who doesn't have a job, I suppose, isn't included.
Do you really think that's what the legislature meant when they went through the pangs of creating the definition employee? They meant to say... people who are not employees? Everyone's an employee except people who don't have a job?
Yes, because the case law they were responding to dealt with personnel files of employees, so they enacted a statute that dealt with people who are employed and have an employment relationship with their employer. The definition's meant to cover two categories. Public employees are covered by, they're employed by an authority, and then private sector employees are covered by the second definition, which is any individual who is employed by an employer other than an authority.
Can you describe for me the theory of statutory construction that you use to come to the conclusion that the definition of employee is anyone other than people who don't have a job?
Well, it would just be reading the statute is that any individual who is employed by an authority, that covers all individuals who are employed by a public unit of government, and then it says, or any individual who is employed by an employer other than an authority. So that includes all employees employed by someone not an authority, private sector employers like nonprofits, even for-profit business, whatever.
Doesn't the state of Wisconsin fit in there? The state's not an authority under the statute. And the second definition, why aren't people who are employed by the state of Wisconsin, why don't they fit in that second definition?
Well, the structure of the statute indicates that the legislature thought there aren't people employed by the state of Wisconsin. The people are employed by the various authorities. For example...
Well, there are a lot of people that work for the court system that get their paycheck from the state of Wisconsin. So everybody that we employ as a court employee who's paid through the state would not come under the statute?
No, they would. They would be employed by an authority.
But the state is not an authority under the definition of the statute.
The statute indicates that...
Wait a minute. The what?
The structure of the statute indicates that the legislature did not consider them to be employed by the state, but by the court system or...
I see. So it would be the subdivision of the authority that you would look to for the employer as the statute is constructed the way you're reviewing.
Yes. The definition of, for example, the definition of state public office specifically references positions like the governor, who would seem to be an employee of the state of Wisconsin. But why would he be included in the exclusion from the definition of those employed by an authority if he really was supposed to be considered employed by the state of Wisconsin, which is supposed to be covered by this second definition?
Well, excuse me, Chief Justice, I wonder, just you made reference to authority, and I think you're asking something I'm also very interested in. I just want to clarify. Are you asking if the state of Wisconsin is an authority for purposes of the last word under Section 19.321BG?
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Counsel, yes. Please proceed.
Now,
Excuse me, Justice Abrahamson. I just want to have him answer my question. Is the state not an authority for this last definition, the last word in 1BG?
The state of Wisconsin is not listed as an authority.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. That's all
yes.
I need to know. Go ahead.
The structure of the statute indicates that there's the state isn't considered an employer for the purposes of this statute, that the employer is considered to be this relevant authority at the subdivision that the person
well,
works
and for. One of the named authorities is any court of law.
Correct.
So it seems as if I'd be in a, if I were an employee, it would be of any court of law, right?
Yes.
That's explicit.
Yes. I mean, the courts are covered by the public records law as authorities.
Well, that's what you say. We haven't said that.
What she's saying is that remains to be seen.
Sure.
And that's not at issue in this case.
It is not.
Now, I want to know, an individual who is employed by an employer other than an authority, and you keep talking about a private sector. Well, why is somebody in the private sector governed by open records law?
Well, the statutory notes of Act 47 indicate that the legislature thought the reasoning of Wozniacki and Milwaukee teachers could be extended to private sector employees who, for whatever reason, their personnel files ended up in the hands of an authority. And these people, frankly, probably have more privacy interests in their personnel documents because they don't work for authorities. They wouldn't expect to be subject to public records requests at all. So to the extent that the DOJ or someone else ends up with personnel files of a private sector employee, they are now covered by the pre-release review.
So the private sector records have to be in the possession of a public.
Correct, because you can only make a public records request to an authority.
Exactly. That's why I asked that question.
Yeah.
You indicate that the statutory notes, I think you said, reflect the premise that you were just advancing. What note are you referring to?
It was the same one referenced by, the prefatory note, I believe,
Okay. Explains
the background of why the statute was being enacted. In most cases, when someone is arguing against the plain interpretation of the statute, they're arguing the public policy justifies their position or the legislative history justifies their position. But in this case, both of those cut against Moustakis' position. We've discussed the legislative history, but in public records law, it has one of the strongest public policies in all of the state, and that policy is in favor of openness. As the public policy says, in 1931, In recognition of the fact that a representative government is dependent upon an informed electorate, it is declared to be the public policy of the state that all persons are entitled to the greatest possible information regarding the affairs of government and the official acts of those officers and employees who represent them. So under the public policy, the people of Vilas County and the state are entitled to the greatest possible information about Mr. Moustakis. They're entitled to the greatest possible information about what the Department of Justice is doing. And so because of that, exceptions to disclosure to be the denial of public access is generally contrary to the public interest, and only in an exceptional case may access be denied. And so that the public policy in this case supports disclosure, not preventing the disclosure of documents of an elected official who this investigation was found to be unsubstantiated. But the people of Vilas County should know what the investigation was about, and it can be, you know, in an election, Mr. Moustakis is an official and can talk about how the investigation was unsubstantiated. So there's really no reason to keep these documents from the public. And it should be noted that the department did the balancing test and went through.
I want us to deal with this issue. So the Department of Justice has communications, written communications, dealing with a district attorney. And now the Department of Justice has a record request, a public record request, relating to these records, right? Now, the Department of Justice is the custodian of communications filed in that office?
Yes.
All right. So what does the Department of Justice do with this record request? How does it deal with it and analyze it and decide whether to release or not to release or to release redacted?
Sure. Well, first, the department has to search all of its records for records relating to the subject of the request, which can be a fairly burdensome process. And then an assistant attorney general, not myself, went through page by page and line by line and looked at all the various, what was the information contained in the documents, and did the balancing test for these things.
And they looked at all the documents that referred in some manner to the DA, right?
Well, relating to this investigation of the DA, the DOJ would have some.
All DAs, just one DA. Okay. Now, they first look to see if the DA is covered in one of the exceptions, right?
Correct.
They kind of give them notice, right?
Yes, or even if there's an other exception to public records law, there's several of them in the law, they'd have to make sure that those didn't apply here. But.
So I assume they've done that, is that right?
Correct.
And then they reach the conclusion that it's not within an exception.
Correct.
They don't have to give them notice.
Yes.
All right. Now what do they do before they're ready to release?
Well, they went through and redacted information on the balancing test of the public interest in disclosure versus the public interest in false information getting out. So some of the information is redacted on the public balancing test. And then they were going to release the records. In this case, because the DOJ works closely with district attorneys around the state, Kevin Potter, who was the records custodian at the time, called Mr. Moustakis with a courtesy notice to let him know that we had received a public records request and that we were going to be producing documents in response to that request.
Send them to documents?
He did.
Redacted or not redacted?
The redacted versions.
Okay, so the DA got these versions. Now he's been on notice. And ordinarily, if the DA has made the balance and is redacted on the basis of the balance, the DA would release the records, right?
Well, DOJ would
DOJ,
yes,
sorry.
DOJ would release the records, but there's a lawsuit filed before.
Okay, but before the DOJ can release these records, which they intend to release, the DA that's the subject, sues, right?
Correct.
Declaratory judgment, mandamus, injunction, What's the nature of this lawsuit?
Well, there's been two complaints. The first complaint was simply an action under 19356(4), claiming that there was an action for pre-release review under that statutory subsection, and that the judge should do the balancing, review the balancing test that was done by the department. There was then
been under the Wozniacki rule. That's
yeah.
What it was required, right?
Yeah, like the new statutory Wozniacki action, basically. And then there was later an amended complaint that added the two additional causes of action for a writ of mandamus and a constitutional claim.
Okay. And what's the position of the DOJ, that these lawsuits are not permitted, that they should be dismissed?
Yes, they should be dismissed. There's
for the issue of stopping the release.
Yes, that the lawsuit should be dismissed because Mr. Moustakas doesn't have standing under the statute for a pre-release balancing test conducted by a court.
Does he have standing under the statute to augment the records under 9A and B before you release them?
Our position is that he does not.
Why?
Sub 9 says, sub 9A gives the right to augment to a record subject who is an officer or employee of the authority holding a local public office or a state public office. Our interpretation is that you have to be an officer of the authority. Mr. Moustakas is not an officer of the Department of Justice, therefore sub 9 doesn't apply. And he hasn't asked to augment the record at all. So.
Well, he would then be outside of the statute no matter who has the documents unless he holds them himself, correct?
Yes,
if
he would.
If your reading is correct, well, then who is it that has the ability, employees of DOJ, they have the ability to augment, but other employees of other, that hold public offices don't have the authority, if your reading is correct?
They have the right to augment when the request is made to their employing authority, but not when the request is made to another employing authority.
Why in the world would there be that difference? What purpose does that serve?
I'm not sure. The statute reads that way. I believe there's probably a thought that what augmentation is going to be done, what documents could Mr. Moustakas augment in this case?
Well, nobody has any idea because we don't even know what you're talking about, which is very hard when you have a standing case.
Well, an employee would be able to augment additional records from their own personnel file. For example, if the attorney, there's a record requested to the Attorney General, there are documents at the DOJ relating to the Attorney General that could be augmented to provide a more fuller picture of the disclosure. In this case, I'm not sure what other additional documents there would be for someone who doesn't work at DOJ. What other documents does DOJ have that would be augmented, other than perhaps documents that Mr. Moustakas would create himself to be submitted?
Well, it's difficult to know what might be there because we don't know what you have. So, you know, you could probably think of a scenario that he may have documents that show that what you have is totally a lie and totally untruthful. And that may be worth submitting at the same time if you're going to release your information. I don't know, because I don't know what you're really talking about.
He did have that. He should have brought a claim under sub 9A in addition to his claim under sub 4, but there is no such claim, so we haven't really looked into this issue.
So augmentation is not an issue before us?
No, there is no claim for augmentation in this case.
The documents that you seek to release have been redacted.
Correct.
According to opposing counsel, dramatically redacted. What are the factors that go into the department's redaction of those documents?
It's the traditional balancing test that's done. The public interest in knowledge of what the Department of Justice is doing and access to the information versus the public interest, as Justice Abrahamson made clear in the first questioning, that the public interest in perhaps people's reputations and false information. So it's a case by case kind of analysis depending on what the document says. So for example, I believe there was some information that was so unfounded that it has been redacted because it just, like, the balancing test there is not in favor of release, but it's in favor of not letting that get out.
Isn't this fairly subjective on the part of whatever department employees are making these judgments?
I suppose the balancing test is always subjective to the person that's doing it. So,
is it fair, since there's such a subjective redaction, that there shouldn't be some review by somebody else?
Well, there is review on the side of openness, where the requester can ask that the information be made public. There isn't review on the side of the for greater protection, and that's because of the purpose of the public records law is greater access to information and not less access to information.
But some false information can be released, is that right?
Well, there's documents containing allegations that were found to be unsubstantiated. But the department is saying that they're unsubstantiated, so people, the electorate can be informed about that. They would know that the allegations were unsubstantiated.
So unless I misheard your previous answer, two questions go to Justice Prosser. And your previous response was the people who did the redacting, you said it was an assistant AG, not yourself, and someone else. Who was the other person?
Well, the assistant attorney general did it, and then Kevin Potter was the records custodian, so he had ultimate authority.
Okay, so two people went through the documents. I thought you said a few minutes ago that there were some allegations that were so unfounded that they were redacted in totality.
Yes.
So two people at the AG's office went through and decided, well, this is unsubstantiated, so it could very well be false, but we're going to let it out because the public record, the public policy is openness and transparency, but the two of us, presumably working alone, have made the subjective determination that these other allegations are so unfounded that they should be redacted and the public is not entitled to those. Does that accurately sum it up?
Yes, that's how the balancing test works.
Well, thank you for illuminating us, because I don't know about other members of the bench, but I wouldn't have known that before. You just described it, that two people decide what is so unfounded it won't be released, but is unsubstantiated, so there's no basis to believe it's true, but it doesn't meet two people's notions of what is so unfounded as to not be released. So I thank you for that education.
I think that someone has to perform the balancing analysis, so someone at some point has to make a judgment call as this question. The contents.
No one disputes that, counsel. What is curious is the criteria that you have just described. No one disputes that someone has to do the balancing test.
The criteria is contained in the Lindmeyer case.
Question to you. This balancing that the custodian is supposed to make is established by this court, isn't it?
Yes.
And this court said, you custodian, before you release, should make the balancing test, right?
Yes.
Before was Nikki, it was not reviewed by the court.
Yes, there was no judicial review at all.
That's right. So the custodian makes that test. Nikki said, oh, unfair, unfair, unfair. It should be reviewed. And then it gets cabined. And only certain people can get it reviewed. But this is a court-established balancing test.
It is.
And the court gave criteria for it in that case, as well as other cases.
Yeah, it's not just the Lindsmeyer case. There's other cases, but the Lindsmeyer case dealt specifically with an investigation into a public employee that turned out to be, didn't lead to any charges at all. So it's fairly similar to the case here.
Does the fact pattern matter at all? I heard counsel say, you know, you could fit under a variety of scenarios, and, you know, there are open records requests that could clearly fall within the statute. This one obviously has created at least argument on both sides as to who's right in their interpretation of how this falls. Do you think that it matters? Do you think it matters whether it's a traditional open records request, for example, if one was made to the DA for records in the DA's office versus one made to a department like the Department of Justice about someone who's an elected official? Does it matter that the person could fall within various definitions under the statute? And hearkening back to what Justice Rogensack, Chief Justice Rogensack was talking about, you know, when there are parameters that attach to when you can say, hey, that shouldn't be released. How do we reconcile all that? Or do the facts not matter? You have your label, and everyone's an employee unless you don't have a job, and that's where we are on it. There just aren't controls for you if you happen to ask the right authority.
Under the facts of this case, it doesn't matter who has the documents. Mr. Moustakas does not have a right to pre-release judicial review. It could matter in some other circumstances who has the documents, because sub 2A1 talks about documents relating to a disciplinary matter of an employee. In that sense, documents created by the employee's employer likely fall under that category. If you're making a request, if the request goes to someone who's not the employee's employer, it's unlikely that the documents would fall under that definition, that it relates to a disciplinary matter of the employer, of the employee.
In that scenario, let's just say the employer would be the DA, but they also happen to be records that DOJ had for some reason. Maybe they used to work at DOJ, and then the DA hired that person. So would that person have the right to object or not?
I'm not sure I understand the scenario.
If you ask DOJ, they get the records. If you ask the DA, they don't. Or you're saying it depends who you ask.
It depends on what I'm trying to say is that the document at issue, who created it, will change whether it falls under the statutory definitions. So I could see the Department of Justice being in possession of a document created by someone else's employer, where it does fall into a disciplinary matter. Why the Department of Justice has it, I don't really know. But if the Department of Justice created that document, it likely isn't a document created for the purposes of a disciplinary matter. For example, in this case, it's created for a criminal investigation, which just isn't a disciplinary matter of an employee. But in terms of who is an employee, that deals with if you're an employee of an authority. That's like any authority. It doesn't matter who the request goes to, whether you're an employee.
Could I ask once more? District Attorney Moustakas is employed by?
For purposes of this statute, by the Vilas County District Attorney's Office. The statute doesn't deal with who signs a paycheck. The statute indicates that they're to be considered under the first category of employees, and then they're actually excluded from employees, so in a sense they aren't even considered employees at all. So the question of who employs them somewhat becomes irrelevant because they aren't even considered employees for the purposes of the statute. They're excluded from being employees. But they are covered by the first section of those who are employed by an authority.
When you say first section, 1BG?
1BG, the first category of 1BG.
Right.
See my red light come on.
Thank you very much. And now for your rebuttal, you can leapfrog for us what you were going to do when we concluded the first part of your argument.
Counsel, could I ask you, just to clarify in my foggy mind, opposing counsel says that Mr. Moustakas is employed by the Vilas County District Attorney's Office, and you say he's employed by?
The state of Wisconsin. So I think I'd like to start there. The definition in 19.321BG, when you look at that definition, it states, employee means any individual who is employed by by an authority. And then we go to 19.32, and it states authority means any of the following, having custody of a record. And it states an elected official. Now, perhaps Mr. Moustakas' support staff would fall under that definition, but he would not.
Which different definition?
The record relating to an elected official found under 19.32.
Is he an employee of DOJ?
He's not.
Does DOJ have custody of the record?
He does, or it does, excuse me.
How does that fit, then, in the words of the statute?
Because we first have to determine he is an employee. And because, so here's the analysis. It's as simple as this. And I heard counsel talk about the clarity of this statute, and we've been talking about the clarity of the statute for 2 years, and I can assure you that I've read the statute ad nauseum, and it's not clear. But when you take Moustakas' situation, the first thing we need to determine is whether, as an elected official, he's employed by an authority. Because if he is, then that analysis stops. But he's not. He's not employed by an authority because the state of Wisconsin is not an authority. Now, I'll grant you it's a very unusual scope of employment, but he's not employed by the Vilas County District Attorney's Office because there is no such entity serving as an employer. His paycheck, I mean, the state prosecutor's office, who runs under the Department of Administration, is where they run all of his benefits. His check comes from the state of Wisconsin. His pension comes from the state of Wisconsin, not the Vilas County District Attorney's Office. That is solely for him to have a portal to act on behalf of the state, so when he brings a charge against somebody, it doesn't say the Vilas County DA versus accused. It states state of Wisconsin versus the accused.
Counsel, may I ask them? If he is employed by the state of Wisconsin, am I employed by the state of Wisconsin? Is a legislator employed by the state of Wisconsin? Is the governor employed by the state of Wisconsin?
I tell all my clients I need to look at the facts, and so I'd have to look at how you're structured when you serve as a Supreme Court justice, but perhaps, and I think probably so, because someone has to ultimately serve as the employer. Now, I'm going to say, I think maybe that's what the legislature meant to do. Maybe they did, but they didn't say that. And when the Department of Justice is saying that there is this balancing test, the balancing test didn't include anybody talking to Al Moustakas. Nobody came to him from the Department of Justice and said, what do you think about this? Can you tell us some information so that when our two people are reviewing it, we can get a feel for what's going on here?
Well, and I have a question related to that. Your opposing counsel, prompted by one of the members of the bench, referred to the Linsmeyer case and other cases that set forward the general parameters, the general outline and guidelines that state agencies are to follow when redacting. I ask you, obviously you've been dealing with this case for a long time, what part of either Linsmeyer or any other the other cases referenced make reference to the redactor making the subjective determination of things that are unsubstantiated versus those that are so beyond the pale as to be something that's unbelievable, so therefore should not be released? That's the part I was trying to key in on. Obviously, somebody has to make the redaction. Obviously, this court has set out guidelines for how that's done. But I am looking and looking in the cases that that have been cited for the basis for the state's conduct here, and I'm not finding it.
Yeah, that's a my light's on, Chief
Please
Justice.
Continue.
Yes, you can answer the question.
I think that's a fundamental issue that is concerning because in those cases in which the legislature then went back to the drawing board and fiddled with the statute, okay? They come and to us and they give us these more access to public records, but also more access to the courts, perhaps. In this case, on that point, that's the issue, is you're having a custodian, you're having one person in most cases make that determination, and the Department of Justice said they're making a judgment. That's what he said, a judgment. And Moustakas is not saying that under the statute the records don't get released. It's just what he's saying is the judgment should be made by a judge. That's the difference, not the custodian who has this unilateral authority to do just what you said, to pick and choose.
Not an unelected bureaucrat who may or may not be trained in the fine points of open records law, but an officer, but a member of the judiciary, a member of a court of record, who will then presumably make the proper record in determining how or how not he either followed or departed established guidelines for determining which records will be released and which will be redacted.
And then a final point on that question that you had, that our analyses, the balancing test of going to Moustakas and talking to him and having the redacted version reviewed by the record subject and having judicial review, that doesn't mean that the public interest is going to be thwarted by the record ultimately being not released. That's not what that conclusion means. What it means is it may be released, it may not be released. It will be determined by an independent judiciary, not somebody who can hide behind the record custodian provisions.
Well, what you're saying is demonstrably and on its face true. And then in this case, I learn the question comes down to how preposterous is too preposterous to be released?
Counsel, you seem to be advancing the argument that there has to be judicial review for some kind of equity or some kind of due process, but the statute itself, by its history of Act 27, contemplates there will be some in a category. It says in the notes that we'll have three categories. One category is without providing a right of notice or judicial review. Another one provides a notice of impending release and the right of judicial review. And the third category is records that are closed to the public, to public access under the open records law. So the legislature apparently intended that there would not be judicial review for all.
I'm going to say that you're segueing slightly into our constitutional argument, but for purposes of this action, I'll answer it as follows. Pardon me.
Well, the discussion now didn't reference the word constitution. It seemed to be you're advancing the inequity of, oh, my goodness, there isn't an impartial judicial review here, but that's what the legislature intended.
Maybe. Here's the reason I say that. Because if Moustakas is an employee under 19.321BG, which we are, is. That's our position because of how the first subsection ties back to authority, that I believe he is. Then he will get judicial review. But the legislature put a spare tire on this jalopy, and that spare tire is this. That spare tire is it has subsection 9, and that's specifically designed to keep parties out of court by having the elected official receive a copy and be allowed to augment. That's essentially their due process. You get to put your spin on it, so to speak. Just like counsel and I each have time to talk, you have that opportunity. I would argue that the custodian in this case called not because Al Moustakas was a DA or a fellow law enforcement officer. Maybe he did, but I think it's because it was false. And he knew it was false, and he wanted to tell him, this is coming down the river, and it's false. And sorry, you don't have any recourse, but here it is.
Ask you
Thank
this.
You very much. If we're going to continue, my colleagues, we are beyond the time limit, and it's hard now for me to have to go back to the state and give the state more time. So we treat both of you the same, which I try very hard to do in oral arguments. So though I certainly can't prevent my colleague from asking a question, I would ask the bench to restrain itself in the interest of fairness.
I am restrained. So here's my question. Seems to me your position is the same as the position position in was Nikki and the progeny. And that you do not recognize any change in the statute from Wozniacki or an attempt to cabin Wozniacki.
I think we recognize the change, but under this fact pattern, because of Moustakis's employment, I don't think that that change, perhaps what the legislature, everyone talks about its intent, would apply. But if it would apply, then I think in that instance we still have the other analysis that has to be concluded. And so that's our position: is Moustakis is an employee. If Moustakis is not an employee because of his elected office, then sub 9 springs into action.
The result of your position, though, is Wozniacki and its progeny apply.
Yes. And it, yes.
Pardon me?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought it was. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, and thank you both for fine arguments. This is a really sticky case with a sticky statute that has a lot of implications for more than just the parties to this action. So thank you very much. We're going to take a break now so that the students can leave and another group can come in before we begin our second case, but we are adjourned for this meeting.